plate a potential nugget.
Moving to getting senior leaders on board as you scale up, Alyssa, one of the themes you talk about is when you bring senior people in, the founder needs to spend disproportionate time in transferring context. Can you talk a little bit about what all you have in mind, or where all the opportunities lie for a founder to transfer context to an incoming leader?
Well, transferring context is everything. I mean, when an incoming leader comes in, they don't know the norms. They don't know the culture. They don't know where everything is kept. They don't know the history. So you want them to have fresh eyes. That's actually really good. But you want to share with them how we, to help them get wins. How do we do things around here? How do we experience a win around here? You want to have them, the CEO and the founder, and maybe also an onboarding buddy, somebody else, really help them figure out how to get wins quickly, how to orient themselves quickly, who to build a relationship with inside of the company immediately, what all the history is, and what the sensitivities are, so they understand, especially in a remote environment. That was to your point earlier. In a remote environment, you're like, who are these people? Where is everything? How do I figure out how to get myself onboarded and connected into the community? How do I build the communal relationships around here? When you're the CEO and you invest the time in helping that person, that will reap massive rewards for you.
And any interesting rituals you've come across off the various clients you've worked with? Any out of the box things that you've seen people do to transfer context?
Well, I think both transferring context and rituals are two different things, right? I think that for context, I think a ritual might be an end of day coffee or an end of day, in some of my clients, whiskey with this person to see, you know, what have you learned? What questions do you have? That kind of thing. I think rituals overall inside of a company when a new person comes on board would be, let's do a tour. You know, we're all remote now. So let's do a tour of your house, right? Let's do a tour of your work environment. Or here's a collage of pictures of me, of when I, you know, of my kids, of my spouse, of my hobbies or whatever, and sort of do collages of each other. Those are lovely rituals that you can do as a team.
And in a related context, Alyssa, you actually use an interesting term. You say that when a senior leader comes on, the founder needs to re-onboard himself or herself, you know?
Yeah.
You say that. You talk about your conversation with Daniel, a fintech founder in New York. And you mentioned that when he brought on senior leaders from the outside, there was an opportunity for him to pause and re-onboard himself. So can you talk a little bit about this notion of re-onboarding?
Yeah. You know, I spoke to, I'm now doing my own podcast called From Startup to Grown Up also. And I interviewed Greg Gallant, who is the founder of Muckrack. He's been the founder and the CEO for 14 years, and the company has grown. And he made the point, it's really funny that the day one of my company, I was called CEO, and now 14 years later, I'm still called CEO, right? But it's a very different job. Your job as CEO, as your company scales, changes very quickly, and certainly every, 6 to 8 months, and very much every 18 months. And you might need new executives around you. You might need to really orient in the way you're doing it, but you're literally, your job changes. So if you think about onboarding as coming onto a new role, it's very powerful for you, the CEO, to sort of like walk out and come back in as the new CEO in a way, and re-onboard yourself and reacquaint yourself with the way you are now, with the way the company is now. By the way, also your old employees who have been with you since day one or since the early days, they see you in some ways also as that same person. So it's very helpful also for you to help them understand how much you've changed, for you to help them understand that you're a different person and that the job is different and that they have to also make those kinds of adjustments for you.
Now, this is a topic where we do have several resources of the podcast that could help you if you want to know more. I love the point Alyssa makes about how founders need to adapt to the evolving context and possibly re-onboard themselves as the role evolves. The challenge in a lot of these situations is that when you're dealing with a continuum, it's often hard to bring in discreteness. My previous guest, Dan Pink, speaks about the notion of finding punctuation marks which help us make sense of slow changes in context. Something interesting came up in my conversation with the chess legend Vishy Anand. He speaks about the significance of move 40 when you play a timed chess game.
I'll give you one quick example.
Mm-hmm.
I would often get to move 40, and move 40 is significant because it's the end of the first time control, which means that you get a fresh amount of time on your clock, and normally your time pressure is over.
Mm.
But a lot of people, the time between move 32 and 40 is so tense,
mm.
and they're so caught up in it, they're not able to stop.
Mm.
They'll make the 41st move anyway. And especially once upon a time, I was very prone to this error.
Mm.
And I was also prone to an error that when I had half an hour and my opponent had 3 seconds, I would try to play fast so that he wouldn't have any time to think. It doesn't take a lot of intelligence to stop yourself and see that if you play fast, to not give him any time to think, you're not giving yourself any time to think either.
Mm.
So these were two areas where I had problems. And one of the things I did was I would simply make a mental note. I would think of some painful loss I had suffered as a result of these habits. So that when I went to the board, when I was on move 35, my opponent down to 3 seconds, he's shaking and the temptation is overwhelming. And I have half an hour, I'm in no pressure. I would just tell myself to get up, go to the refreshment area, have a little bit of water or some coffee, and then I'd come back. And I found that this broke the tension.
Hmm.
I had become too emotionally bound in the game, and this broke that. And then I was able to bring some sanity to the process. And especially doing this after move 40, when neither of us is in any tension anymore.
Right.
But just getting up, going away, and leaving it for 10 minutes. And then you come back, and you find that it resets your brain almost. So that's one technique. But there are techniques like this that you learn. They're part of your bag of tools and your toolkit, and that's how it works.
What's a mechanism to walk away from the board and come back? I feel that's a question worth reflecting upon. On the subject of transitions, I had an opportunity to speak to Darlene DeRosa of Spencer Stewart, who speaks about effective transitions in the remote world.
As an example, one CEO said he literally would change his video background to make it look like he was in the Switzerland office one day, and he got off to such a fast start because rather than taking 3 months to travel to every office, he could do the same thing in a month. And so he could have so many video meetings that were much more effective and one-on-one meetings, by the way, where he has bigger reach in terms of the employee population, plus a number of town halls, and said he'd never go back to the way he was doing it before. That's just one example of how, yes, it's harder and you've got to be more thoughtful, but there can be a lot of efficiency if you do it well. And so we've seen some really interesting examples of organizations who have done a nice job rethinking their onboarding strategy. So sending people care packages to help them understand the culture of the organization even before they join, and sending care packages. So it's not like you're just getting a laptop. You're getting things that help you understand and learn about the company. We've seen some organizations hiring and creating new roles to really think about onboarding and culture.
The more I spend time in this space, the more I realize that the derailments rarely happen because of the gap in the new leader coming up to speed on the what of the business. More often than not, the derailments happen because the leader hasn't acclimatized on the how of the business. If you want to dig in more, you can look up the conversation with Michael Watkins, who's one of the leading thinkers in transition acceleration. You might also like the conversation with R. Gopalakrishnan, who's written the book Crash, which profiles 15 high-profile CEO appointments that led to derailment. You might also find the curated playlist Settling into a New Context. This could be of value, where you have perspectives from multiple leaders and thinkers on how you can accelerate your transition. You can find all these resources at playtopotential.com and either go to the guest section if you're looking for a particular guest, like Michael Watkins or Gopalakrishnan, or you can go to the curated playlist section if you're looking for the playlist Settling into a New Context. The metaphor I use with founders is that when you're procuring new seeds, getting the high quality seed is only one part of the problem. You need to ensure that you take care of the soil, the fertilizer, and the climate for the seed to grow into a plant and a tree. And that, I often notice, is left to chance. Thank you for listening.